As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Go, man. Tear it up, dude.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome back, everybody. Here's the Catch. It's been a little while since our last episode, but now the 2023 journey is upon us. Training camp about six practices in. It's heating up with pads having come on a little bit earlier this week. And boy, there is a lot to talk about. This is maybe the most stacked roster in the entire National Football League. And on top of that stacked roster, which essentially makes the 49ers look like a Pro Bowl team at many of these positions, they have a quarterback battle, quarterback controversy. And really the controversy and battle, well, the controversy might be everywhere for all three spots if you look at what outsiders are talking about. But the battle itself, Matt, seems to be really focused on the QB2 spot because Brock Purdy is getting all the first team reps at practice. I think unless a major slip up there occurs, he's going to be their guy to enter the season against Pittsburgh on September 10th. But Sam Darnold, Trey Lance, and Brandon Allen are all duking it out for that number two spot with Trey Lance and Sam Darnold obviously having the leg up over Allen.
Yeah, and the leg up and snaps too. Allen has that number three quarterback snap count, which is very light. But as we saw last year, it doesn't mean that you're out of the running altogether. Brock Purdy started out as the number three and by mid/late August had overtaken Nate Sudfeld for that role and then booted him off the regular season roster. So it's possible for Brandon Allen, but I agree. It's the real dogfight seems to be between Sam Darnold and Trey Lance. And you know, we should preface this by saying there have been six practices so far. So we're still very early. And I think it's important for us, the readers, the listeners, certainly the coaching staff is always kind of reminding themselves to keep an open mind, that don't formulate opinions early and not be able to move off of them. And just in these 6 days, I mean, we've seen some movement. Sam Darnold, I thought, was not just the sharper of the two quarterbacks, but maybe the sharpest of all four in some of those early practices. And then on Monday, Trey Lance just had a really fantastic practice, had three really special throws, basically asserted himself on that day. And as we were discussing before we came on the air, that's what he needs. He needs consistency. He needs to have that sort of practice with no missed throws, getting the easy ones, hitting the layups every day of the week. And, if he does that, then maybe he holds on to that number two spot.
Yeah, that Monday practice from Trey Lance, I thought was his best training camp practice in a 49ers uniform, not just in the limited sample of this year, but going back to 2021 and 2022, I couldn't remember a better one. I remember in 2021, he had a couple early practices where he hit a deep ball or two and everybody was oohing and aahing on the sideline. But as far as playing the position, sitting back there, surveying the defense, carving up the defense with precise intermediate passes, and also hitting the gimmies, I thought that by far his best practice was on Monday, because at the end of the session, they did a move the ball drill with a 2-minute clock. The clock wasn't up on the board, but you could tell they were hurrying up the offense. So he actually had to execute. He actually had to manage the offense. And he made a throw to Ray McLeod, who was coming out on the slant pattern and was blanketed in coverage. There wasn't a lot of room. He made that throw about 15 yards over the intermediate portion of the field, right where it had to be. McLeod went down on a knee to make the catch. Next play, Tay Martin near the sideline set up the 57-yard field goal. I think that was Zane Gonzalez that drilled it to end practice. So Trey Lance was in command on Monday. The problem is that the previous practice that we saw from him, he had missed two really short throws. One was a little harder than the other because there's a guy in his face, but it's still a throw that Kyle Shanahan is going to require his quarterback to make. It was a 5-yard pass into the right flat. And then the very next practice after the really good one on Monday, on Tuesday, Lance was 4 of 6, but the two misses again were throws at point blank range. And Matt, the bread and butter of any coach's offense, but especially Kyle Shanahan's offense, is the short game. These short bootleg throws, the ones where you roll right coming off the fake handoff, you have George Kittle leaking out into the flat or a running back out there, any tight end out there, you've got to be able to hit those, because the difference between first and the difference between second and four and second and 10 is really, really big. Second and 10 puts a whole lot more pressure on everybody, including Lance, right? So to keep the line moving, it might not be sexy, but the short game has to be near automatic. And I don't think it's near automatic yet for Trey Lance. One day he'll be awesome and he'll hit everything, and the next day he won't hit everything. And like you said, the 49ers need to see that consistency from him. They need to see that floor be a little bit higher.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the big part of this offense, and we've seen it in these training camp practices, is throws to the running backs. I mean, Christian McCaffrey is on this team now, and this whole offense is really, I don't want to say dictated by Christian McCaffrey, but it's been kind of streamlined to fit his skill set. So that means a lot of throws to McCaffrey, and when he's not in, it's Elijah Mitchell who's getting a lot of targets. Ty Davis Price and Jordan Mason are getting the same. And even the rookies, the two undrafted guys, Kalen LeBourne and Ronald Awott with that 13 group, are getting a lot of targets. So it's not just hitting those guys. It's hitting those guys in stride. And yeah, absolutely. I'm sure Kyle Shanahan is really scrutinizing that. And that's what when they've been saying over and over again the past three seasons that Trey Lance needs reps. It's those types of things. It's getting the footwork, it's getting all of that in sync so that those throws are close to automatic. And you're right, we're not at the automatic part, but there does seem to be a comfort level and accuracy in a lot of Trey Lance's throws that maybe we haven't seen before. So that's what we're going to have to look at from week two on out. They go to Las Vegas next week to scrimmage against the Raiders. Can that continue to increase, and can he find that consistency? Right now, what is he, David, at 64% completion rate?
Yeah, he's over 60%, and this is the first time that he's been over 60% in a training camp.
Yeah, so. I mean, I really feel like that's it's a very broad brush, and it's not going to tell the whole story, but that's a marker, I think. You need to be over 60% if you're an NFL quarterback. Cam Newton, Colin Kaepernick, two guys that really ran the ball well, were around that 60% mark for much of their careers because they had so much else that they could offer. But in this day and age, I think you need to be over 60%. We're seeing some guys get over 70% now. That's how automatic some of these QBs are. So if Trey Lance, I think, can continue that the mark that he's got now, maybe inch it up a couple percentage points, I think that that kind of tells you a pretty good portion of the summer story for him.
Yeah, I mean, I can count, I think, five passes that should have been relatively easy completions that he's missed this training camp. You add those five, or if you complete four of those five, he's near 70%, right? So, and that's exactly where the 49ers would want him to be. At that point, it's a QB1 discussion. At the, you know, he's actually firmly challenging Brock Purdy if that's what happens, if he's able to deliver on the short game in that way. So for Trey Lance, I think it comes back to the mechanics that he and Jeff Christensen were working on in the offseason. Jeff Christensen is a short game specialist, so he's working on those quick releases. Anybody who has worked with Jeff Christensen in the past has developed a quicker, tighter release. Jimmy Garoppolo was one of his earlier clients, and Patrick Mahomes is on the list. And Patrick Mahomes had to rework a lot of what he did when he initially joined the Chiefs, and now he works with Jeff Christensen to keep the mechanical improvements up. So I think that Trey Lance did a lot of necessary work this offseason. The key has been to carry that work and carry those improvements that he's made over from the lab into actual live action. And we haven't reached fully live action yet. Quarterback can't be touched in training camp. That won't happen until preseason. But I do think, and I think the 49ers think, that Trey Lance has successfully ported some of the mechanical improvements from the lab to the practice field, which is a big first step. It's just going to be a long process. It's not going to be all solved overnight. You have to remember how this has worked for Trey Lance over the course of his NFL career. He came in 2021 really raw out of North Dakota State. When he was so raw at North Dakota State, Trey Lance, I mean, he had to more throws. He needed more throws with the 49ers in 2021. He started to get some of those throws, but because of the rawness, the 49ers were in a position where they had to sit him on the bench for a year. They gave Trey Lance some package play. Unfortunately, he broke his finger in some of that package play that was week 3 against the Raiders in the preseason. That broken finger derailed him for that entire season. The 49ers weren't able to give him the reps that they wanted. They weren't able to creatively mix Trey Lance into the offense because his finger was broken. He wasn't able to properly bend it. And the after effects of that lasted into the 2022 offseason. By the time he was fully healthy in 2022, after he'd finished doing all that catch-up, Trey Lance got hurt in week 2 against the Seattle Seahawks. He fractured his ankle. So he's needed more time. He's needed more reps. And he's finally getting some of that time and some of those reps now. But in the interim, while we were all waiting for Trey Lance to return, Brock Purdy emerged, right, Matt? And because of the timing of all this, it's created this weird situation in which Trey Lance is no longer the prized pick who the 49ers are dedicating all of this time and all these resources to. They have to focus a little bit more on the now because Brock Purdy has proven that he could be really good in the now, but they're still trying to yield the most out of Trey Lance. And I think that some of that development project is actually turning out some promising results so far here early in training camp.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's absolutely safe to say that Trey Lance is not as far along as the 49ers thought he would be at this point, and it's due to injury. Missed basically a full season of development. And in the interim, they saw Brock Purdy work this offense the way that Kyle Shanahan wants it to be worked. And so you've got a bird in the hand versus two in the bush a situation. You have to go with the proven commodity. But that doesn't mean that Trey Lance is terrible and everything else you read on social media. It just means that his development was interrupted and it's still going to take time for him. And it's interesting because it's a much different approach to him than they've had. I mean, he was the guy last year. He was the guy taking, 16, 20 reps in a practice instead of the 6 to 8 that he's getting now. So there's more pressure. There's no margin for error anymore. Not only that, but he's got this other guy, Sam Darnold, breathing down his neck for that number 2 spot. So everything is putting Trey Lance under an amount of pressure that he really hasn't had to this point. And maybe that's what he needs. I mean, that was the formula for Brock Purdy last year. Very small amount of snaps, no margin for error. He made the most of what he was getting. Brian Griese kind of said something similar. I asked about, you know, any way that these guys can augment their scant amount of snaps. Either, you know, sometimes they do virtual reality, sometimes they, you know, work with receivers after practice. And he sort of sloughed off the question. He said, you know, everybody's getting the same number of snaps. It's just that some of them are mental snaps. So what he's saying is that you don't take a break during a practice, even if it's Brandon Allen taking the snap. So it's sink or swim time for Trey Lance. And, you know, the positive part is that he appears to be swimming more than he is sinking so far.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how this unfolds. You mentioned the joint practices against the Raiders next week. I mean, I couldn't think of a better script, right? You have Jimmy Garoppolo on one side against the 49ers defense this time. So that's going to provide a measuring stick of sorts for these 49ers quarterbacks. I know it's not going to be apples to apples because Garoppolo is going to be working with a different group of talent than the 49ers offense in a Raiders uniform now. But still, he gets to face the 49ers defense that's been giving these 49ers quarterbacks trouble in practice. That being said, after the first couple days of practice, which you know were definitely won by the defense, and the 49ers QBs were completing only about 40% of their passes, as of late, the last few practices, Matt, the completions have been much more plentiful. And I think that this is how camp usually goes, especially against a good defense. It's going to be ahead of the offense early on, but you would like to see your offense gain its footing. And the 49ers, regardless of who's been in their quarterback, seem to have found some of their offensive footing. That being said, we should highlight the defense, and we need to start with its best player, who isn't at training camp right now. It's Nick Bosa. Bosa is holding out while he awaits his new contract. And there doesn't seem to be a lot of panic on the 49ers side about this. They obviously hold ultimate leverage here because Bosa's under contract for $17.9 million this year. But he wants a new deal, and he might want the biggest deal in NFL history for a defensive player, although that hasn't been confirmed yet. But I think that might be at the center of some of these negotiations because it is a tricky negotiation considering the fact that the top paid edge rusher is TJ Watt at $28 million per year and the top paid defender is Aaron Donald at $31.7 million per year. There's a big gap there, and we've long wondered if Bosa's contract would come in above Watt's or above Watt's and Donald's, right? If he would completely bridge that gap of about $3.7 million annually between Watt and Donald. And I'll tell you what, it matters to the 49ers because they already have a very crowded cap situation in 2024. So when every million matters and you consider that a $3.7 million gap extrapolated over 5 years of a contract can mean $15 to $20 million. Obviously, this is going to be a contentious negotiation because the 49ers are looking out for their own roster to try to keep this as sustainable as possible while Bosa's trying to cash in. He's the reigning defensive player of the year. And, you know, there may not be a better time than now to argue for the top defensive money in the game.
Yeah, I don't see how... how the 49ers can avoid paying him less than what Aaron Donald's making. As you note, he's the best defensive player in the league. I mean, it seems pretty obvious. I mean, I always kind of roll my eyes during these situations. It seems obvious what they need to pay him. You know, you can organize it any way you want, but the bottom line is that he was the best player in the league last year. You need to pay him as such. So I don't quite understand what the ultimate holdup is. I mean, I certainly understand their salary cap issues in coming years, but they've known for several years now that this was coming. Certainly after Bosa's incredible 2022 campaign. This is a guy who does everything right. I mean, treats his body like a temple, comes in ready to go every offseason, is a great teammate, you know, sits down. You've documented this, has these sort of brainstorming sessions, debriefing sessions with Trent Williams, which is valuable to both guys, valuable to everybody else at those positions. What they're missing right now, I mean, I think the guy who's the biggest loser in all of this is Colton McKivitz. Because Colton McKivitz could really stand to get the sharpening that he would get from having to go against Nick Bosa, I don't know, 10 times a practice. That's valuable reps for somebody who's coming into that that right tackle spot as the starter for the first time in his career. So that's what the 49ers are missing. McKivitz will get some of that when he gets to Las Vegas or Henderson, Nevada to play the Raiders. But yeah, that's the missing element so far in 49ers training camp.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Nick Bosa is such an impactful player. The 49ers signed another big-ticket impact guy this offseason in Javon Hargrave to pair with a Bosa, so it's going to be fun to see both of those players next to each other. But still, the defensive line, I think, has raised some eyebrows with its play. It at times has overwhelmed the 49ers' offensive line. It's hard to track sacks and that in practice because you can't touch the quarterback and the QB doesn't have a fair chance to really get away as a result. So we kind of say, okay, that might have been a sack, but I can for sure say that I've seen a lot of pressure. But the hinge point of this 49ers defense, Matt, might be on the defensive end position opposite Nick Bosa. And Drake Jackson has showed up this season 15 to 20 pounds heavier than last year in a good way, a lot of muscle. The way to prove that it was a good way might have been the zone drop that he executed on Sunday. 49ers ran a zone blitz. You don't like you kind of get caught with your pants down in a zone blitz if the opposing team leaks a running back out of the backfield, because that means your defensive end who's dropping in the zone blitz has to cover him. And it just so happened the 49ers sent their fastest running back, Elijah Mitchell, out of the backfield on a little wheel route, and Drake Jackson had to cover him, and Drake Jackson had just added those 15 pounds. Drake Jackson completely blanketed Elijah Mitchell. So Drake Jackson at 260 plus was stride for stride with Elijah Mitchell, and Trey Lance's throw ended up hitting Drake Jackson in the back of the jersey. That to me was maybe one of the most impressive plays at training camp, because we know that Drake Jackson can still move even at the heavier weight, and that's really, really promising news for the 49ers.
Yeah, I think it's clear that Drake Jackson not only is athletic and really kind of has a Gumby-like ability. I mean, he's a guy that does backflips and has incredible flexibility. I think he's a smart guy, too. He obviously wasn't fooled on that play. He knew what his assignment was. But the bigger picture is that he knew what his shortcoming was as a rookie, and he attacked it in this offseason. And I think that has to really hearten the 49ers and make them feel good about making him their top pick in 2022. I mean, it's obvious that they see Nick Bosa and Drake Jackson as their future ends. My question is, who's the week one starter? Is it going to be Drake Jackson or Cleveland Farrell? Because I feel like Farrell has been the better pass rusher of the two. I mean, I'm always writing down 94 sack, starting in the spring and these last few practices. It was, I think it was Farrell who got to Brock Purdy and knocked the ball out of his hand. I don't think Kyle Shanahan liked that scenario very much, given how similar it was to the Hassan Reddick scenario back in January. But, it was Farrell sort of infiltrating the pocket there. And he got Trey Lance yesterday. He actually ran into poor Doc Dressler, one of the equipment guys in the backfield. But Farrell's been disruptive. I don't think he's as physically gifted as Drake Jackson. He's more of a savvy vet just because he is. He's got more experience. And so that's a nice competition, I think, to have for the 49ers because it's going to squeeze one of those guys to the top. But right now, I'd give the edge to Cleveland Farrell being the week one starter at that spot, and Drake Jackson maybe being the guy who comes in on obvious passing downs.
Chris Kocurek talked about the fact that he is always going to stay true to a deep rotation at defensive line, even though this year he's dealing with a more top-heavy group than last year with Bosa, Hargrave, Armstead up front. And Javon Kinlaw, somebody we need to talk about too, because he seems to be performing really well now that he's been healthy for nearly a year. But even with the prospect of having such a top heavy line, Chris Kocurek said that he really wants to come in waves. So I think, you know, when we talk about who's going to start, who's going to play, all of the above, and the more the merrier, because if Chris Kocurek can field a unit of 9 or 10 defensive linemen who are all capable of delivering at the level that he wants them to deliver, he sees that as a way to make sure that the 49ers can keep their foot firmly on the gas pedal intensity-wise for a full 20-game season. And I say 20 because that's the amount of games they've played in each of the past 2 years. And it's not easy for especially players at these really physical positions like the defensive line, it's not easy for them to deliver at the level the 49ers need them to deliver at, which is 100% GTFO. We know what that means, right? Chris Kocurek wants them to get off the ball with reckless abandon. It's not easy to play at that kind of effort and that kind of intensity for such a long season if the rotation is too thin, which is why he loves coming in waves. So as long as a player proves himself capable of playing at the intensity and with the quality of play that Chris Kocurek is going to want out of this defensive line, I think he's going to get a shot at least a couple hundred snaps this year. And if that happens, and if people stay healthy, then the 49ers will be able to execute the vision, which is peaking at the right time. Having the type of intensity that most teams can only dream of having in week one or week two, having that type of intensity in week 17 and then into the playoffs.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Javon Kinlaw because as good as Javon Hargrave has been, it's been Kinlaw who's just dominated these one-on-one pass rush drills with the offensive line. And it's just been 2 days worth. But on the first day, Kinlaw was by far and away the highlight. He was blowing guys backward, which is what he's done in the past, but there's a new element to his pass rush, which is he's slimmer, he's sleeker, he's quicker, and he's able to kind of use that quickness to get around guys more. He even took, David, a pass rush at right defensive end, and he beat the tackle. It was Leroy Watson, so a guy who's doing a little bit of learning himself, so it wasn't like he was beating Trent Williams around the edge. But still, the fact that they would even line him up there just kind of underscores where he is in his physique and his ability to move and how that knee is feeling. And so I think that's a big deal. This is a contract year for him. They didn't pick up the fifth-year option. I think everybody understood why. It's a guy that's dealt with knee issues basically every season of his career so far. But that pressure, the desire to prove yourself in your contract year, plus all the work that he's put in, it seems to be shaping up for a very special year for Javon Kinlaw.
I think so, but he just has to stay healthy. And I talked to Chris Kocurek about that as well. And Chris Kocurek is passionate about this issue. He says that Kinlaw has put in so much work behind the scenes. And Kocurek doesn't talk like this about everybody. I mean, he's a very honest guy. He's a really good interview. And you could tell in his eyes when he's talking about Javon Kinlaw that he really thinks that he deserves to see some light at the end of the tunnel based on all that he's been through. I mean, we can recap it. He shows up in 2020. Was improving throughout that year, but suffered a severe knee injury late in that season against the Cowboys. It seems that they didn't really get a firm beat on what exactly was wrong until week 8 or week 9 of the 2021 following season, when they shut Kinlaw down for the year and he had to undergo the ACL reconstruction. And then he tried to come back in 2022 from major ACL reconstruction and just wasn't quite able to get the fluid levels in the knee down. The swelling kept on building back up to the point where they shut him down for most of the year. He came back at the very end, but obviously wasn't fully himself yet. So we are now in the longest uninterrupted stretch of Javon Kinlaw's NFL career, uninterrupted by injury concerns. He's been healthy now and able to train and work on his craft for nearly a year. So the 49ers are optimistic that because of this ability to stay healthy for this longer stretch of time, they think he can carry it over into the regular season. Now, you know, a lot of this is going to be up to chance, right? But you could certainly tell that this team and this coaching staff is pulling really hard for Javon Kinlaw.
Yeah, and, you know, he's going to lead that wave of second teamers. I mean, if Kocurek wants to lean on that Bravo unit, maybe a little bit more than they did last year, I feel like Kinlaw is going to end up being the most talented member of that unit. And maybe it's Kinlaw and Drake Jackson, or maybe it's Kinlaw and Cleveland Farrell. But, you know, that's a pretty good, either way, it's a good foundation for a backup line. And that's going to give Kocurek, I think, more confidence to go heavy with that line as well. To your point, so that they can be fresh going into early January, late January, and hopefully for them, mid-February. So it's a good problem to have.
Absolutely is. How about the other spots on this defense? Linebacker, Matt, is, I think, the best core in the league with Fred Warner and Trey Greenlaw. But that third spot, it's up for grabs because he's Al-Shire left in free agency. So far, I've been impressed with Marcelino McCrary Ball. Had a couple pass breakups. Dropped what should have been an interception from Brock Purdy the other day at practice. But D. Winters has also started to make some plays. He broke up a pass. Nice, good anticipation, which is what we saw from him on his TCU college tape. He really hopped into the flat to knock away a pass from Sam Darnold in the red zone. So these youngsters, Jalen Graham, D. Winters, they're going to have a chance at that third linebacker spot. It's a nice, you know, I don't want to say an easy entry into the league, but it's one of those positions where you can make a more graceful entry as a rookie because the third linebacker is only out there for about 30% of the snaps. So second-year man Marcelino McCrary Ball, first-year sixth-round pick D. Winters, or seventh-round pick Jalen Graham, they all seem to be possibilities for some playing time.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we saw Azeez Al-Shaair do that in 2019. He kind of came out of nowhere. Undrafted guy, was coming off an ACL. Nobody expected much from him. And he tore it up in the training camp and especially in the preseason. So that'll be fun to watch to see which one of these guys really kind of pops. I talked to Johnny Holland, the linebackers coach. You could tell how fond he is of McCrary Ball. And McCrary Ball is one of several guys who played sort of that hybrid safety nickel linebacker role. A lot of colleges call it the star position, which means that he's got some back end experience. He's got experience covering guys. You have to be fast in order to play that role. And so that's what that Sam spot is looking for. You're basically you know, when the Sam comes off the field, the nickel cornerback goes on the field. So they basically have the same role. You have to be able to go sideline to sideline. You have to be able to cover. Sometimes they come off the edge. Sometimes they don't. But he seems kind of custom made for it. And I agree with you with Winters. He had a play at the line of scrimmage, a tackle, quote unquote tackle. They're not allowed to really tackle, but one where you had to kind of check your roster because you're wondering, oh, wait, was that Dre Greenlaw or was that D. Winters? Because they do have sort of a similar profile, a similar physique. They're low to the ground. They're fast, basically. And so I think that's exactly what caught the 49ers' eye with D. Winters. And I'm sure they're very happy to be kind of seeing some of the things on the field that they projected back in April when they drafted him. And then the third guy you mentioned, Jalen Graham, he's been lining up at middle linebacker, which to me is significant for a rookie. You rarely see that. It's with the third group, of course, and so it's not a huge deal, but it tells me that this kid has picked up the defense quickly enough that he's able to basically call the plays, receive the plays from the coach, line everybody up. It just denotes trust and the fact that he's sharp. So, who makes the team? Who actually gets into games? I think special teams for that trio that we just mentioned is going to be paramount. And, all three have wheels. D. Winters has probably the best wheels of that group. That'll be fun to watch. It's a crowded position by design, and I think the 49ers have to be really happy with all the very young guys at it, and that's Jalen Graham, D. Winters, and Marcelino McCrary Ball.
Let's flip it over to the offensive side of the football because, you know, we talk a little bit about Colton McKivitz. He said that he obviously would benefit from Nick Bosa being in camp just through sharpening his skill against one of the best in the game. To me, the offensive line is in an interesting spot because they, you know, at this time last year, there was a lot of hand-wringing and a lot of worry about this group because they're going to break in an entirely new interior. Aaron Banks at left guard, Jake Brendel at center, a rookie last year, Spencer Burford at right guard. And they ended up acquitting themselves really well. You know, all things told, that offensive line was a top 10 unit in pass protection during the regular season. They improved in run blocking as the season went along. But ultimately, they did run into a wall in the playoffs. When they faced the elite pass rushes, the Dallas Cowboys and the Philadelphia Eagles, they did look a whole lot worse. So it was possible to be optimistic coming out of last season about the offensive line because of the progress that they made in the regular season in pass protection. But you also could clearly see they still had another step to take. Can they take that step this next year? Because now the interior line is not three first-year starters. All these guys have been playing together for a year. That's a big boost. Trent Williams is still Trent Williams. And then you got Colton McKivitz at right tackle. And one thing, Matt, about Colton McKivitz is, yes, first-year starter. Yes, the cap hit is only $1.5 million. But also, yes, he might be a better pass protector than Mike McGlinchey. He's not going to be a better run blocker, but he might be a better pass protector. And to me, that's a big deal because if this all falls into place the way the 49ers think it will, this offensive line might be able to take them to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, on paper, you would think that the aggregate is that they take a step forward just based on the youth and the relative inexperience that they had at this point last year. I think they're right about McKivitz. Again, this is without Nick Bosa, but McKivitz has looked good in pass protection so far. There have been a couple of lapses in 11-on-11, but the one-on-one stuff, he's basically undefeated. Again, just 2 days worth. The Las Vegas practices are going to be really telling for him as well. But, he's somebody who's used to this scenario. He had it at West Virginia, kind of got thrust into the starting lineup as a freshman and had to learn on the fly and became a real kind of true leader on that team over the years. So he's used to responsibility. He's known about this for 6 months now, more than that, 7 months or so. So he just seems like a guy who is not going to be overwhelmed by the responsibility. That's what it looks like on paper. Sometimes second year players or second year starters can take a step backward. It's hard to see that with Banks. It's hard to see that with Jake Brendel, who's, you know, I think he's almost 30 years old, if not 30. I thought that Spencer Burford has been playing great so far. I was really impressed by Spencer Burford last year. A really kind of eager, smart guy. And to me, he's the most physically talented right guard that they've had since Shanahan and Lynch took over. I mean, they've pretty much tried to scrimp at that position every year until last year when they put a draft pick, a guy who played tackle in college, at that spot. And, they put a little bit of an investment in it, and I think that investment is going to pay off very nicely for them.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see that second-year jump from Spencer Burford, because he certainly has his head on, right? I mean, anybody who works with Trent Williams in the offseason as an offensive lineman, you're probably going to get better just if you listen 5% of the time. And I'm sure that Spencer Burford, after I really got to know him pretty well last year talking after games, he's listening 100% of the time. I mean, he is just a student of the game. He was tossing around college defenders like a rag doll playing tackle over there at San Antonio, UTSA. And, the book on him coming out of college, and I think this is just laziness sometimes, and you see some of these scouting reports was, oh, he's gonna have to work on his strength, he's not gonna be able to play for a couple years. If you just put on the tape at college, the guy did not need to work on his strength. He was way too strong for that level. Of course you have to be stronger at the NFL level, but I just think that he had an unfair tag put on him because of the fact that he went to UTSA, which obviously was a smaller conference school than your typical Power 5 school. But lo and behold, Burford held his own as a first-year starter at the NFL. So I think those scouting reports were proven to be wrong. Elsewhere on the offense, Matt, the biggest star of training camp, offensively at least in my opinion, well, there have been two really big ones. Brandon Ayuk and Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey, it's almost like automatic. He's this energizer bunny, never shuts it off, catches big touchdowns. Every single time he touches the ball, feels like he could squirt through for a big gain. I mean, he is just a pro's pro. Anthony Lynn told me that he thought that Christian McCaffrey was game ready at OTAs. And he wasn't kidding. I saw him at OTAs. He looked game ready there. But Brandon Ayuk, we had this practice that we watched the other day. Three touchdowns in the red zone, and then he caught one that was like a 70-yard touchdown. They just couldn't cover him on the crossers, and it's tough because Charvarius Ward has missed a little bit of time. He's had a bit of a groin issue for the 49ers defense, so Ambry Thomas has had to be in there as the first-team corner instead of Charvarius, and the 49ers have just picked on poor Ambry with Brandon Ayuk, who is eligible for a new contract now, probably won't sign one until next offseason. But it seems to me that with each passing day, Matt, that price tag is growing higher because of what Ayuk is doing out on the field.
Yeah, he's the quarterback's slump breaker. If you're a 49ers quarterback and you've had a couple of bad series, then the next one, you're looking for Brandon Ayuk as soon as he's out there. And you're right, the crossers, anytime he's working against a nickel cornerback, if he works out of the slot, I mean, that's such an advantage for the receiver. You can go left, you can go right. You're not, you have no boundary to sort of hem you in. And he's been lights out in those situations. And it's a gimme a lot of times. And, he's so elastic. He's got long arms, great catching radius. And we saw a tremendous catch by Juwan Jennings the other day. I think it was on a Sam Darnold throw across the middle, well covered, and Darnold just fired that thing high and a little bit outside of Jennings, and he reached up and grabbed it. He's 6'3 with long arms, and I think the only other receiver that could have caught that pass on this team is Brandon Ayuk, just because he's a leaper and he also has sort of that those long arms and that nice catch radius. So my point is that he gives the QBs a lot of confidence to throw in his direction. He bails them out on some bad passes sometimes as well. And that's what you want. I mean, that's how you become a quarterback's best friend, that you make them look really good and you sort of pad that stat line. Maybe some Brandon Ayuk catches will help Trey Lance get over that 60% hump this summer. But he's been good. I agree with you on McCaffrey. I thought Elijah Mitchell has looked good. He was a question mark in my mind. The last time we saw him in the spring, he was working through some sort of injury, which is the book on Elijah Mitchell so far. But he's looked peppy. He's comfortable out there. He's one of these guys, one of these tailbacks, catching not just little dump offs and little crossing routes, but some down the seam throws as well. That would be a real mismatch, I think, if opponents try to cover Christian McCaffrey and Elijah Mitchell with linebackers this year.
Well, there's so much to talk about on this 49ers roster. We'll be able to talk about it all throughout the course of this season. We're just getting started. This has been the reintroduction for the 2023 season of Here's the Catch. So be sure to tune in next time. We'll be with you again during this training camp session, probably with a lot of live rooms as well this year. So you'll be able to ask your great questions and we'll be able to answer them. Anyway, for Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to you next time on Here's the Catch.